Once upon a time.
This is the intro to Into the Woods, a musical by Stephen Sondheim and James Lapine. And what's playing in the background is the opening number, where characters from classic fairy tales sing about their wants and desires. Cinderella wishes to go to the King's Festival and ball. Jack of Beanstalk fame wishes for his cow to make some milk. And a childless baker and his wife wish for a child. The first act is all about these fairy tale characters trying to make their wishes come true. And at the end of Act 1, once they've achieved all their goals, all the characters sing about how happy they are, gaining their wishes, and punishing those who did them wrong. Summed up by the narrator singing, "It came to pass, all that seemed wrong was now right, and those who deserved to were certain to live a long and happily ever after." If you thought I was going to sing that, you are surely mistaken. But as we revisit these characters at the start of Act 2, all is not happily ever after. Our protagonists have to deal with the realities of living with their wishes and what that means to really get them. Throughout Act 2, the characters have to put their own wants and desires aside and band together to help their community survive and combat a common threat. It's a powerful musical that forces us to confront our own ambitions. We spend so much time thinking about our wants and our desires that we rarely think about what happens afterwards and how our lives will change. And of course, that's completely reasonable. That is the thing we want to achieve next. Why would we think about what happens after? But sometimes getting your wish may not be what's right for you. Or it could very much be the key to your happiness, but something out of your control alters it. Sickness, death, poverty, even a shift in your own perception can sour what you wanted. Or getting your wish sets you on a path that makes you happier and more fulfilled than you ever thought possible. So it begs the question, what happens after you take the big chance? And that's what we're going to ask today on Leap of Faith, the show where we try to make sense out of love through taking risks and chances. My name is Dan Cassarella, and into the woods without delay, but careful not to lose the way. This whole podcast is about exploring why people take chances. And there's no better example of someone taking a huge risk in life for their own betterment than my friend Greta. Now, if you listen to the first series, Greta was my friend I met while working at VH1, who then went on to hike the Pacific Crest Trail. We were both executive assistants at VH1, and we were joined at the hip. We'd visit each other's desks all the time, go to happy hour together. You may even recall that when we went to lunch together, I dared Greta to eat all of her wasabi in one bite, and she often did. We had a lot of fun together. But despite those good times, it wasn't really a happy work situation, and that inevitably bled into our personal lives. I eventually quit and moved to Los Angeles to work in late night TV, and a few years later in 2019, Greta left to hike the Pacific Crest Trail, a longtime dream of hers. In April of 2020, I interviewed Greta for Out of Love about that experience, which, if you haven't listened to that, I'd highly recommend stopping right here, going back to revisit, having a snack, and then coming back to this show. When I interviewed her, it was the beginning of the pandemic, and although we had both taken big risks, there was more uncertainty in front of us than ever before. We were both underemployed, and we didn't know what was next. Greta took a big risk in 2019 for herself to hike the trail, but what happened afterwards? We admire people who take these big swinging risks, and when they achieve them, that's the end of the story. But life isn't a fairy tale, it moves on and so do we. So today I'm talking to Greta again to see what happened after the Pacific Crest Trail, and what happens after you take the big chance, rebuild your life, and adjust. Now, as a quick note, I interviewed Greta in May when she had just moved to San Francisco, and now it is October. So while she's new to the area in this interview, she's been settled for quite some time. So now, let's talk to Greta again.
I didn't tell you. I had wasabi for the first time this week.
Really?
Huh? Wait, after years of being hesitant to have it.
You never even tried it before?
No, everyone had such a reaction that I was like, I'm not fucking putting that in my mouth.
I didn't know that. I didn't know that you hadn't even tried it.
I probably kept that from you because I didn't want you to then be like, no, you have to eat all of it.
I went to a really fancy sushi restaurant a few nights ago, and you won't believe there was no wasabi at all.
Interesting.
Well, because it's like omakase, so they just give you each piece and it's like as it's supposed to be. So,
Yeah, you don't need a palate cleanser. You know, the real best part about when we would get lunch together is when I would have nothing to do afterwards, which was very frequent, I would make you a quiz about the lunch we just had, about what we ate and what we talked about. And then I would print it out, put it on your desk, and then I would grade it.
I always failed. No, I definitely still have those somewhere. I'll have to dig them up once my boxes arrived to the West Coast. And they were always, I'm pretty sure, about our bosses as well.
Yeah, there's a lot of gossip that we literally left a paper trail of.
I would just leave those in my desk. Like anyone could have walked up and seen the debauchery and fired us immediately.
And yet they gave us a salary. You were one of our most popular guests from the first series, talking about you hiking the Pacific Crest Trail. And then around that time when we started doing the show, like any good hipster, you were one of the first people to get COVID. After you recovered from COVID, thankfully, where were you at in life?
I know, it's wild thinking back on when we recorded that and that it was just at the beginning of this incredible journey that we've all been on. I think I got COVID then. It was never really confirmed, but it was like right as things were shutting down, my mom had carpooled with somebody who tested positive and then we both got sick. But since then, I mean, I kind of buckled down for like 4 months. I had just gotten off a huge string of traveling, like the hike, and then me and some of my hiking friends continued to travel in South America and like just like fully moving all over the place. And then it just like all came, hit a wall with the pandemic. And I ended up moving back to Brooklyn right around the time of the pandemic. And so I lived in Park Slope for that summer. And I kind of started gearing up to go to this coding bootcamp that has sort of shifted my whole life over the past 2 years.
What were some of the hikes you did in between the PCT and the beginning of the pandemic?
Pretty much as soon as we got off trail, none of us had jobs. This is like me and my trail family. And we were having so much fun. We were like, let's just keep this going. So we finished the trail like October 1st. In October, we spent some time in New Hampshire and Maine, which is where I'm from. We stayed with my family and we hiked in the White Mountains in New Hampshire. We hiked in Acadia National Park in Maine. And then in November, we flew down to Argentina because like as winter is starting on the Northern Hemisphere, that was just the middle end of spring down south. So we went down to Argentina and we hiked in Patagonia a bit. We went to this mountain town called El Chalten that has just like these incredible hikes. We did a little backpacking, but mostly it was like day hiking. And then we flew up to another place in Patagonia in the Andes, and that is called Bariloche. And my friend Anna and I did like over a week of just backpacking out in the backcountry there. And that was incredible. And then, yeah, I honestly haven't done as much backpacking as I would like since then. I did a little section in Washington in summer 2020. But I think in the last year, I've sadly only slept in my tent like one night, which has been really difficult. I miss it.
You could set your tent up in your apartment.
I've considered that. And I was actually talking with an old trail friend. She was posting on her story that she did just that. And she like set up her laptop and was like looking at photos and watching videos of the PCT. And she was like, I do this when I get homesick. Like she just had her tent in her living room and her sleeping bag and everything. And I was like, that's a really good idea.
It's endearing.
It's sweet.
I feel like in America, the PCT, the Appalachian Trail, those are like the two big ones. How do you decide and discover new hikes to explore?
Yeah, I'm trying to figure that out. There's this guide app that you can download on your phone. I think they recently rebranded to Far Out Guides, and it's like the go-to application for through hikers. So I've been kind of just browsing their selection of hiking guides. Now that I just moved out to California, I have been looking into like local hiking groups so that I can meet people who are more familiar with the areas and hopefully make some friends and learn from them.
Hiking the PCT was such a cathartic experience for you. Did you learn anything new or additional on those hikes that you went on afterwards?
That is a good question. I mean, the hikes that I went on afterwards were kind of part of this like larger traveling experience that I was having, where I think starting the PCT and leaving that chapter of my life in New York really allowed me to feel very comfortable being very nomadic and like just living out of a backpack. So then when I was traveling for 2 months in South America, I went to Mexico for a month as well. I just was kind of like on a roll, living out of my backpack and feeling okay with that sort of instability, which I guess probably helped me as we carried over into the pandemic, because then I had just moved to Brooklyn and within a week I was like, nope, I'm going back to New Hampshire. Let me pack a bag. And I didn't, you know, at that time I thought it was only going to be for 2 weeks, ended up being for 4 months. But I think I learned how to lean into that sort of instability and being nomadic, just going everywhere. I've kind of continued doing that for the past 2 years. It's only really in the last couple of weeks that I'm finally slowing down, and I'm sitting in this new apartment that I just signed a lease on, and I'm like ready to slow down and have some more structure in my life.
It's interesting because you're talking about being confronted with uncertainty and adapting to that. Yet after the trails and during the beginning of COVID, or the first wave of COVID pre-vaccine, you were spending more time in New York and you kind of were back into working in media. What was your mindset as you returned to things that you already knew, having gone through your hiking experiences?
I actually had to go back and listen to the episode that we did 2 years ago to remember why I moved back to New York, because I was thinking about like what we were going to talk about for this episode. And I was like, why did I move back to New York? Because I'm here in California now. And I was like, this is where I always wanted to be. Mm-hmm. I just like couldn't remember how I had gone on like such a journey and then like ended up back in New York. But I think at the time I already had this plan kind of in motion in my head, at least, that I was going to learn to code. And that was something that I had decided while I was traveling in South America with my friends. My friend Connor, who was one of my trail family members, had gone to the same boot camp that I ultimately ended up going to, had had great success with it. So he like introduced me to that possibility. And so my plan moving back to New York was not just one where I didn't have an end goal in mind. And I was just like, oh, well, it's what I know. I'll go back there. It was more like, I know what my next step is, but I want to kind of be somewhere where I have like friends and a support system as I pursue this next huge change. Mm-hmm.
Do you feel like the pandemic kind of, in a way, like reshackled you to the change of the past? Like there was so much uncertainty in that time between, would the virus go away? Would we get vaccines? What's it going to look like to have healthy work relationships? Will we work from home forever or for a while? Do you feel like because of the onset of the pandemic, you had to revert back to things that were familiar because the future was so historically uncertain?
Definitely. That was a big factor, I think, in deciding to go back to New York and then stay in New York for another 2 years with like small periods where I went to stay with my mom. I also lived in New Jersey for a little while with my ex and his family. And there was just a sense of like not wanting to make a huge shift where I moved to another city by myself as things are so uncertain. But in the past year and a half, like there has been a sense of a new normal, or at least like we know we're able to live through this. So I've started to open up to new possibilities. But I do think that I, in a way, reverted a little bit into a previous track as the pandemic hit and as I came out of my travels. But I think that it was probably a common experience for people through the pandemic.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I came back from California. I was living in Hollywood for a long time. And I was like, I'm going to move to New York and go back to television. And then the pandemic hit. And I was like, well, I don't want to live with my parents anymore. So let me go back to where I went to school. And I moved to Philadelphia and I love it. I'm really happy to be here, but it's certainly not something that I had mapped out. And I don't know if there was no pandemic, if I would have tried something completely new, because the pandemic made me reprioritize that. Okay. It's important to me to be around my parents, to be like close to them should something happen. It made me prioritize things that socially made me happy, seeing people or being in places that I had a familiarity with. So that was definitely my experience of like, let me try and make something new in a place that feels familiar.
Yeah. And I think that's actually something we talked about last time, which was that we placed a lot of blame on New York and like, is that the root of our unhappiness? And then having gone through these transformative journeys like LA for you, the hike for me, that maybe the root of some of our angst was like more internal, which is true. But I also found after another 2 years in New York that living there just doesn't align with what I value in life. And so I found myself slowly losing touch with these revelations that I felt like I had figured out through my hike. And I just started feeling kind of the same as I had before. And New York is a great place, but I think what really is important to me and like brings like light to my life is nature and access to nature and just like a little bit of a slower pace of life at this current time. So that's hard to find in New York. You have to really work to get to see a tree. So
what is the quickest amount of time it takes to get to like some sort of nature excursion when you're living in Brooklyn?
I mean, it depends like what you, how you want to quantify that. You can go to like Domino Park, McCarran Park. That's great. It's still like, to me, that feels in the city. I want to go somewhere where I cannot hear cars and it's just like the woods. So that would probably be Harriman State Park, which is about an hour, hour and a half outside of the city. And I went there a few times last summer. It's really great, but you need a car. I want to be able to walk outside my door and get that, which I can now. It's like half a mile away.
That's great. Being years removed from the PCT, did you feel in the ensuing years after having gone through that experience that you needed to maybe top that or continue doing these like grand excursions in your life?
Yes, that is a great question. I did feel that. And for a while, my plan was to get a van and either renovate it myself or hire a company to renovate it. And I think part of this ties into, I don't think I felt settled yet in myself. And so I didn't want my life to be settled. And I felt like if I just continued to have this really like bouncing all over the place, distracting lifestyle, then I wouldn't notice my own discomfort internally. Mm-hmm. So yeah, my plan after the PCT was to do van life. I actually put that into motion, got a van at one point, but yeah, things shifted. And I, you know, ended up here in California. I met my boyfriend and yeah, my priorities kind of just changed and I felt a lot more comfortable with the idea of just like being in one place and like what that meant and why that sort of started to become less of a scary thing for me.
Why do you think you felt so unsettled?
I don't know. I've been trying to unpack that for a while. I do think that living in New York was part of it. I think that living in such a wild city where like even just going on the subway and like going to another place, I think puts my nervous system in like emergency mode because mm-hmm. it's so much stimulation. There's so many people. So I think I didn't realize that I was just constantly at this level of fight or flight, even though like nothing was really actually happening, but like my subconscious was always just like in a heightened state of craziness. And that made me just not feel like secure or settled. And so once I started spending more time out here in California and kind of just like living a more settled routine, it started to feel more comfortable. I felt like this knot in my gut kind of start to unclench and I just feel a lot more centered and calm and like happy to have the same routine every day.
Yeah, New York is incredibly stimulating. And the same thing, you know, if you mm-hmm. have a high stress job, if you live in any major city, there's so much going on and you're always active. You're always thinking. I mean, it's literally like keeping your finger in an electrical socket, but less lethal.
Yes.
How do you find time for yourself to really critically think about yourself? And what do those reflective conversations sound like?
Well, I talk to my therapist every week and I've been seeing her since 2017. So that's a huge part of it for me. I view going to therapy like going to the gym. It's kind of just a dedicated hour every week where I can sort through those things that otherwise, you know, you wouldn't really be processing. And I used to think like, well, I know what my problems are. Like, so I don't need to do this. But the actual act of like saying them aloud and talking about them for an hour, whether that's to a therapist or it's to like a tree, just like you need to talk through it. I've also started this practice of taking like video journals of how I'm feeling, if I'm feeling something really intense, because there are times where I'm like, oh, I've finally like figured out why I feel this way about this thing. And I'll never forget that I realized this. And then like a month later, I totally forget about it. So whenever I have a moment like that, I just like take a video. And then some days I'll scroll through my videos and see how I felt at certain chapters. Or like as I kind of hit milestones in my life, I'll like record a video and be like, this is why you're here. This is what you're feeling. I mean, journaling does the same exact thing, but mm-hmm. it's like interesting to hear it spoken aloud from my own self.
Yeah. To see your expressions and how you reacted to it. What does it feel like when you do revisit those emotions and revisit those experiences?
It's really interesting. I was actually doing a little bit of that last night. And what I've found is there's been times where like I've expressed doubt about situations that I'm going into, and like it usually turns out to be right. So I'm like, okay, I need to trust my intuition more. Other times when I've been upset, I feel like I have like compassion for my past self, and I'm grateful to her for like going through difficult moments to make my future life more pleasant.
It's really easy to silence those anxieties or silence those conversations that you need to have, because you could easily just pick up your phone and go on TikTok or Instagram and you kind of like see things that like distract you, but they still become internalized with you. And it's so important, like you said, to say these things out loud. I just started living alone, the first time I lived without roommates in my life. And I find that I really need to make an active practice to have conversations throughout the day. Because if I'm pent up working remotely all day, and I don't use my voice, I don't express how I feel, like I can't go to sleep. And there are times where it's so bad that a friend of mine gave me a stuffed animal for my birthday, and I will literally bring it into the bed and talk to mm-hmm. it like I'm seven again, because you need to, even if no one is listening, you need to be heard and you need to hear yourself.
Yes, 100%. That's awesome that you do that. You should record it and then you can just like, I don't know, hear the hot goss later.
I like the idea of recording yourself. I don't know if I'm necessarily going to put my puppet show on the road, but I think then I'll start just doing bits with the lion, and that is not healthy for me.
Well, it might be healthy for the lion. I think that actually kind of ties into maybe this is something I learned on my hike, because there were periods while I was hiking. I think I talked about one of them on the last episode where you're like, there was this really difficult 10-day stretch, and on like the fifth day, I just had a complete mental breakdown. And it taught me that like, because I realized that I was like 5 days away from like either exit point of this difficult stretch, and it got me more comfortable with like going through difficult situations and uncomfortable situations and not being able to just like change lanes and distract, whether it's TikTok, I constantly have to delete that app because I have no self-control, or whatever it may be, like to actually just like sit in this discomfort and just go through it. And I guess I did that physically on the hike, and now I've been trying to do that more with emotions, because I find that once you sit through that discomfort, you can actually unravel what is bothering you, and then that will dissipate rather than just like having that knot sitting inside of you and avoiding it.
That's awesome. That's super healthy.
Yeah.
Like eating entire globs of wasabi. We're not always the healthiest of people.
Happened one time.
That happened so much more than once. No, at least three. Check the quizzes.
I would not make that mistake twice. Okay.
You had mentioned earlier you took some time to go to a coding boot camp. Your friend Connor inspired you. A career change in general is really overwhelming, let alone one that is so technical. What, aside from you know, his influence, what drew you to coding in particular?
Yeah, I always in high school was much stronger at like math and science, and felt very comfortable with those sort of subjects. And I nearly went to school to become an engineer, or I was going to go to UC Berkeley to study astrophysics. I wanted to like work with spaceships and things like that. But then I got into
what did you NYU go to school to for?
Music business. That was the
you invented the Spotify, wrong, right?
Like lane change. Yeah, I invented Spotify. So I almost feel like learning to code was sort of like a course correction to where I was actually supposed to be the whole time. And it was scary, because when you're at the start of learning something like that, it really does feel like a very behemoth task. But I really enjoyed the material the whole time. Like when I was in Argentina with my friends, Connor gave me some little practice problems, and I was like, yes, like I love this. I felt like the drive to do it. And that kind of just continued. And then it really lined up with the pandemic. I don't think I could have made this change that I did had the world not shifted in the way that it did. to be able to just like stay at home and like take this really intensive online course, which I was able to do remotely. Typically, you would have had to like live in New York City or San Francisco and like actually go into this classroom every day. I was able to do it on Zoom, which was really helpful, and not be in the city at the time. And yeah, all those things really just aligned. And I knew that the light at the end of the tunnel and why I was making this shift was something that would kind of just support the type of life that I want to have. I love that I can work from home now. I'm so much more of an individual contributor, so I never have to face the fact that I don't have any friends. It's just the job that I've created now and that I have now is so much more enjoyable than being an assistant at MTV. So it was so worth it in every way.
Why do you think that pause that COVID brought along was so important for you to take the leap to start this coding boot camp? Why do you think you wouldn't have gotten to it otherwise?
I think because when COVID started, I was coming out of these travels and I was unemployed. I think if COVID hadn't been happening, I would have just immediately found a job somewhere and still had the desire to make this shift. But I think quickly had become distracted by whatever job I landed in and the life and the immediacy of that. But because I couldn't get a job, I really had no choice but to learn a skill. And that was really fun. It's nice. One of my favorite things about learning to code is like having a hard skill now. I feel like I actually have something to offer and bring to the table.
Yeah, that is my biggest fear, internal fear. It's like, oh, it's all really great soft skills. And there's a lot of people with those days. So should learn something. That's why I'm going to become a cobbler and make shoes.
Well, don't sell yourself short on like, I don't, you know, making a podcast, all the stuff that goes into that is so.
This is talking. This is literally something I've done since I was two. You not only changed careers, but as you were saying, you now live in San Francisco. Why the Bay Area?
The Bay Area, or more like what I've been asking myself the past couple of months, like why not the Bay Area? Because I have a lot of family here. I've always wanted to live on the West Coast, and yet for some reason this city was not one of the top ones that I was ever considering when I envisioned my future on the West Coast. But now that I'm here, I'm like, oh my gosh, like this is makes so much sense. I love it. It's a place for me. But I was always thinking like I would end up in Portland or Seattle or something like that. But yeah, actually last summer when I was living in New York, I went on a date with a man who's now my boyfriend. And he told me at the time that he was in New York for the summer and he was considering moving there. And he had been there for a few weeks. I think he was there for like 2 months. So we started dating. And at the end of that period that he was in New York, he was like, I think I like San Francisco better. Like I really miss my lifestyle there. And I was like, wonderful, because I am so sick of New York. Like that's perfect. It worked out great. So we started doing a long distance from there and I would go visit San Francisco. He would still come back to New York. And then like over the course of the next few months, having spent more time here, realized I really loved it and made the decision to relocate.
Nice. What is your biggest piece of advice for people who are doing long distance relationships? Because a lot of this series is talking about people who take big chance. A lot of these relationships that couples we're talking to do international long distance relationships, which seems insane to me. But obviously there's a connection and there's a ambition to stay together and be together. And it's a very special, lovely thing. How do you mitigate kind of the anxieties that come with being at a distance and the disability of seeing that person regularly?
I think a really key factor to a successful long distance relationship is kind of knowing what the timeline is to close that distance. I think if it's just open-ended, that can get a little tricky. In my case, we were really fortunate. We're both engineers, so we were able to travel back and forth very regularly and for like long periods of time. So I would often go to San Francisco for like 2 weeks, 3 weeks. He would come to New York for the same amount of time. I think like the longest we went without seeing each other was maybe 2.5 weeks from the time that we met. So we were pretty fortunate in that sense. But I think it's important to have a clear timeline, clear intentions with like why you're doing this. Like, is this to pursue a long-term relationship, like make sure you both have the same common goals. And then just a day-to-day routine of communication and not skimping on that. Like we would always wake up in the morning and play Wordle together on FaceTime just to like see each other in the morning and then, you know, text throughout the day and then like have a longer call at night. Mm-hmm. And I think it was really nice to have that very first bit of communication so that we're not just like living our whole day and then waiting till the evening to kind of recap everything that had happened. It made it feel a little more normal.
The morning thing is really nice because I think people inherently avoid conversation in the morning because you're waking up, you're tired, you have your own routines for yourself. But I also think it's really important to not save everything for the evening because the entire day is on you. And if you don't particularly love your job or there's a lot going on, like at least for me, I can't speak to everyone, but you might have a negative perspective. You might be a little more complainy or a little more tired or a little more down. And so I think it's really important in general, even if you're not in a relationship, to have good communication hygiene in the morning, whether it's with someone you're going to see later in the day, whether it's in a long distance relationship, whether it's just with yourself to refocus yourself and understand your priorities.
Yeah, definitely. And as long as it's after coffee.
You've been what? In San Francisco 7 days a week now as we record this? How has it been transitioning into now you regularly see your boyfriend?
Yeah, it's been really, it's been good. I'd spent a good amount of time out here and we would spend like 4 or 5 week chunks of time together, almost where we're living together. So the transition now is more like we are neighbors instead of cohabitators. And that's been kind of fun and interesting. We live about a 20-minute walk apart. And that was something we talked about because I've gotten to know his neighborhood really well and I like it a lot. But he was like, I think, you know, since we're not going to live together, you should choose a neighborhood that we can both like explore together. So I live a little bit of a ways away. And so I'm enjoying getting to know my neighborhood. But like yesterday, we both had dinner separately, but then he like walked over and we went and got an ice cream and like walked through the park. And then he still went home and I slept at my apartment. It was actually the first night I slept here alone. And yeah, it's kind of fun to like see each other, not just like continuously for like weeks and weeks at a time, which is great. That worked really well too. But just to have this new dynamic has been an interesting shift.
Yeah. I used to be so cynical about the idea of moving somewhere for another person. I used to like poo-poo it. And I was like, no, you need to be an independent person. You need to have yourself. And as I get older and as I develop, you know, looking into this show in particular, I was so fucking wrong. And not only was I wrong, but I used to think it was cowardly. And now I see it as something that's very, very brave and important because it's an act of change that you're doing for another person. And perhaps because I was then basing a lot of my experiences on people in their early 20s who may not have been doing it for the same reasons. But to me, doing something like that shows that you're a confident person, that you're confident in your relationship, that you're confident in your career, and that you're confident in your ability to adapt to a new place.
Yeah. And this was something that he and I discussed pretty thoroughly and I kind of reckoned with in myself was like, am I moving out here for the right reasons? Because I didn't want to just move out here to pursue a relationship if the place itself didn't make sense for me. And then I kind of asked myself, like, if we weren't together or in the future we weren't together, would I still be like happy that I made this decision? And it was like a resounding yes for me because I have a lot of family out here. The lifestyle that people live out here is really aligned with like what I value. And then he was the like awesome catalyst that kind of let me be excited to make that change and like finally go through with something that I think I had been waffling on for many years, honestly.
Yeah, and that's really important. I think if a romantic relationship is a priority of a person, if that's something you want, like then that should have influence in your life and you should have to think about how you make that work and how it enhances hopefully your life and your experience.
Yeah, it is a priority for me to have a strong partnership, and so that was a huge factor in the decision.
Yeah. In our last episode you said, when I envision my 20s, I always envision having these periods of travel or that I was going to live in different places and that you were in your mid-20s and those things weren't falling into your lap. Now that you are 30 and out of your 20s, do you feel like you lived up to that vision of yourself?
Yeah, I can't believe I'm 30. It's like so weird when people say that. But yes, I love hearing, I listened back on the episode and that quote also stood out to me because I realized that I was able to create that chapter for myself where I was like living all over the place and traveling, and it continued kind of over the past 9 months that I had been in this long distance relationship with Josh. And I think I got it out of my system, or I felt just this shift happen recently where I'm excited to just live a little slower, I think, as I've said. But I also am trying to take stock of the fact that I was able to create that for myself, and I did live those years to the fullest, and they were something that I really wanted for years leading up. And so even though I'm no longer like seeking that sort of nomadic all over the place lifestyle, I'm glad I really had it. And it was a really fun experience. Yeah.
Yeah. You did exactly what you wanted. You know, one of the greatest gifts that time gives you, in my opinion, is that your sense of urgency that you have when you're young dissipates. Mm-hmm. And so you feel a little less anxious. You feel a little bit less like you have to do everything in your life. But as that feeling fades, for certain people, there can become a feeling of regret in that I wasn't who I wanted to be. I didn't have that 20s that I envisioned. And you and I think both felt in different periods before we had done our grand things, you doing the PCT and the insuring travels, me moving to Los Angeles and working in Hollywood, that it felt like such a high mountain to climb that we would never get there. And we were really young when we thought that, you know, like we were in our mid-20s and we're able to accomplish that. And then now my life is different than I thought it would look. Yours life probably looks the same, but I don't have regrets on not following through on becoming the person I wanted to be, even if those ambitions did not lay seeds for a fruitful life.
Yeah, I think you put that beautifully. And the dissipation of that sense of urgency almost feels like a relief right now. And even though that sense of urgency did propel me to do a lot of really cool things that I, in reflection, am so glad I have those memories. I'm so glad I did those things. And I think something I'm trying to understand more is like, just because you want to stop doing something, like I wanted to stop traveling after the past like 3 years of doing it. But just because you're ready to stop something doesn't mean that doing that was like the wrong choice or that was a failure just because something doesn't last forever. So I'm just ready for like the next stage. And I feel, no regrets.
Hashtag no regrets.
Hashtag no regrets.
We're bringing it back.
Yeah. Yeah, baby.
It's funny. I was in New York last weekend and I was walking through Times Square after I saw a musical production of Into the Woods, which is a show about what happens after Happily Ever After. It was about like 11 p.m. It was a full day of like heavy rain here on the East Coast. And it was like kind of a dissipated then, but it was still a little drizzly. And late at night, I'm walking through Times Square and I see all these people, whether it's tourist groups, like kids who just graduated, who are going to New York for the first time, or foreign tourists who haven't been able to travel for years. And they're loving it. They're experiencing the lights and they're everywhere. And I think it was the first time since I was a child that I was like happy to be in Times Square. And I was passing all of our old offices and all of our old bars. And I was thinking about that. I was going to interview you in a few days. And I can't believe I'm going to use this word, but I felt grateful to have that experience that we grew up there together. And I'm very grateful to have you as a friend, because I feel like we experienced not only the similar situations externally, but I feel like we felt very similar at the time and have continued to feel very similar in our ensuing life practices. So I feel lucky to know you, and I feel grateful for Times Square, which makes me sound like a moron. But yeah, that was my epiphany walking through the rain at 11.
Well, that means so much to hear. I mean, the Times Square stuff, a little concerning. Not really, though. I think if I went there, I would probably feel very nostalgic, especially like stepping into Ohlone's and all of our old stomping grounds that at this point do feel like far away in a sense, which is sad.
That's good. That's
it's
you, good. You say that. I say that's like healthy.
Yeah, true. Facts. But yeah, no, it is interesting how even though the surface of like what we've done, like where I've been, where you've been, very different, but the like skeleton of our trajectory and growth has kind of been very similar. And I think that's allowed us to maintain the friendship that we have. That's really special.
It is. It is a special friendship. I thank you for doing this and coming on again. And there you have it. No matter what your chances, no matter how it turns up, it's always really important to take that and be open with yourself. And who knows? Maybe you'll have a happily ever after. Thank you to Greta for coming on the show today. Next Tuesday, another episode of Leap of Faith. If you have a story you'd like to share, please email us at outofloveshow@gmail.com. Please subscribe to and review our show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the iHeartRadio app, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Out of Love is a production of WeWo Media and is recorded at Green Street Studios. It is hosted and produced by me, Dan Casarella. The show is mixed by Ethan Farmer, our producer. Aaron Bradley is our art director. The opening theme this week is the prologue to Into the Woods, and the closing theme is Toronto Mug by Slaughter Beach Dog. Thank you for listening, and we'll talk to you next week. I wish...